In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Time for another Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Joining me today is Taylor Hollingsworth, one of the several guitarists in the Birmingham, Alabama band The Blips. All the group's members are well known on the local scene, and this side project is a supergroup of sorts. Their eponymous debut album is available from Cornelius Chapel Records, and it features our recent coolest song in the world, Inside Out. Let's get a taste of that now, and then I'll be back with Taylor Hollingsworth on your Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. And I've got with me today guitarist Taylor Hollingsworth from Birmingham, Alabama's The Blips. On the line with me now for our Coolest Conversations. How are you, Taylor?
Doing good, man. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being with me. So, man, tell me, how did last year go for you?
You know, quite the strange year for everybody. I tried to find the good in it. It did allow me to relax a little on my busy schedule and have like some really cool family time. And me being the working musician in the family put me home as when my child's school shut down. They're teaching through Zoom lessons now. So I ended up being kind of homeschool dad, stay at home dad, Mr. Mom type of dude. So, man, you know, I don't think most dads get to like spend their that much time with their 7 to 8 year old daughter. So it was pretty cool. I think it kind of gave us like another level of some sort of bonding or something. It's been cool.
Oh, that is very cool. You didn't have any misadventures with the washing machine and the soap suds coming out the top, did you?
No. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's probably something I could come up with that was along those lines, most likely involving our many animals we have.
How many animals do you have?
We got three rescue dogs, a cat, and a ton of fish, probably like 30 or 40 fish in our tank.
Wow.
That's it. You know, nothing super crazy, but feels like a handful to me.
Well, yeah, when it's feeding time, especially, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, the Blips are based in Birmingham, Alabama. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Birmingham. Lived the very early years of my life in Tuscaloosa, actually. That my parents were still in college there. And then they moved here when I was probably 3, 4, 4 or 5, something like that. And then grew up here.
I was going to ask, first state that I know you played in a bunch of different groups or projects before the Blips, and you've got some other current things going on at the same time. But I wanted to ask you about when did you actually start playing guitar?
Man, I was 14 when I got my first guitar, and I bought it off this kid I was friends with. He lived down the street, and he had like this cheap knockoff Les Paul. Mm-hmm. And I bought it for $50, I think. And around that time, that would have been 1994. So that was like grunge was at its peak, you know. So I was super into Nirvana and Pearl Jam and stuff like that. All the bands that were, you know, marketed straight at me.
Well, why did you want a guitar? What was it about the guitar that made you want to play it?
I don't know. You know, I had always loved music. I mean, even when I was young, I remember singing along to music, and then I started getting cassette tapes when I was young. So I think that it just, I don't know, it like appealed to me, just the idea of it, I guess. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I can't remember exactly like what it was, but I do remember picking up on it pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And I had never been good at anything in my life. You know, like I was never the kid that was good at sports. I wasn't really that good at school. I had a hard time focusing and paying attention. You know, I think the first song I learned was Free Fallin', Tom Petty, that little D thing that's real easy. And, you know, pretty quickly I could like play through some songs. And I remember the guy I got the guitar from, he really encouraged me. He was like, wow, you know, you can play way better than I can. And I've been playing for a couple of years now, so you should keep it up, you know. So,
well, you mentioned, being, you know, this sort of grunge thing being marketed at you, picking up on bands like that. But then so the first thing you play through is this Tom Petty song. Your parents, when you began to focus on playing guitar and it's coming to you pretty quickly, did they make any comment to that, or were they encouraging?
Yeah. My dad was a huge Tom Petty fan. So I remember he was a hang glider, and we would go on these long trips. He drove an old VW van, like the old hippie van with the pop-up camper top.
Yeah.
Me and Dan Hall actually have bonded over these VW vans. So
we should let people know here when you mentioned Dan that Dan Hall is the Metro is a stage name. He's the drummer in the Woggles, and he lives there in Tuscaloosa, not too far from Birmingham, about 40 minutes. But there's a lot of interplay, a lot of crossover, lap over between the Tuscaloosa and Birmingham music scenes too, right?
Oh, yeah. All the way.
But you said your dad was hang gliding.
But we would take these long trips. And I remember, you know, Tom Petty just being blasted in the van. And we'd be going up to Tennessee, to the mountains there. One time we took a trip all the way to Colorado. And I remember just the whole way, just a lot of Tom Petty, a lot of Paul Simon too. But, you know, a lot of the classic stuff that I ended up getting back into later. But, you know, always loved Petty. Something about that, those songs, I guess, you know.
Have you ever lived outside of the South?
I have traveled a lot and toured a lot, but I've never like lived longer than a few months anywhere. Kind of through my like 20s, I was just really touring all the time. And then I kind of slowed down in my early 30s, and I got married, and we had a kid, and we were both based out of here, and it just made sense for us to live here with my wife's parents being here to help us with babysitting and such. So I can't say that I've truly lived anywhere else, but I've certainly spent a lot of time.
Well, let me ask you this, because you mentioned having done a lot of touring, and I know that when I've toured, especially years ago when we were first going out and spending a lot of time on the road and reaching, you know, all over the country, when people found out that the band was from the South, they would often kind of project stereotypes on us, sometimes good and sometimes otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's been your experience being from the South and touring, you know, outside of that region?
You know, it's funny. It kind of depends on where you go. I remember the first time that I was in L.A. for a couple months working with this band that was recording a record. And it was one of these big budget records, you know, major label back early 2000s when that still happened. And the people there were always like, it was like I grew up on a farm or something. You know, they weren't very aware that Birmingham was a decent sized city. And, you know, I wasn't really the country bumpkin they thought. You know, they also were very kind of blown away that, like, I didn't live there permanently. Like, when I told them, you know, like, well, when we're done, I'm going back home. You know, I remember that being like a, like, what? You know, like, why in the world? You've made it to here. Like, why wouldn't you stay here? You know, but then, you know, you go to places in Europe where they're like, they think it's just the coolest thing. You know, they love music from the South. I'm sure you've experienced plenty of that yourself. Me and my wife's band, Dead Fingers, we went over there, and I remember thinking, you know, or being a little concerned because it was our own tour. Like, we weren't opening, and I had never done that with any of my own bands. I mean, I'd played in bands that had done that. So I was a little, like, worried about it financially and, you know, for whatever reasons. And, the tour ended up doing great. You know, it was just shocking to me that we could get way more people out over there than we could even here in our own backyard, you know, other than our hometown and Tuscaloosa, or, you know what I mean, like, around here. But as soon as we went to Atlanta or Nashville, it was like, we're hoping for 10 to 20 people. You know, you get over there and it was like, wow, we got 100 people in this room. It was amazing, you know.
But you're exotic then.
Exactly, you know.
Well, I'm happy you mentioned Dead Fingers with your wife. That's one of your main bands outside of the Blips. And there's another one I saw a reference to. I was going to ask you about Connor Oberst's Mystic Valley Band. Is that an ongoing thing too?
That has been, I did do a tour with him a couple years ago, but it wasn't the Mystic Valley Band. It was just billed as Connor Oberst. So he still hired me a few times. Yeah, to play guitar in his band, but we did a very brief Mystic Valley Band tour as well a couple years ago, but it was like only like a week long and only on the West Coast. Huh. So, and there was no new record, you know what I mean? Like, we weren't promoting any new stuff or anything. So, you know, I hope that group gets back together and does another record. I mean, we talk about it, but he's a super busy guy. So,
right. Well, let's focus now on the Blips. So
yeah,
these other guys, similar to you, are involved in other bands as well. I see
that's right.
Sort of a Birmingham super group. Tell me, how did you guys decide to get together as the Blips?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, we were all friends for sure, and kind of, and like, we, none of us went really that far back other than Wes McDonald, who played drums and runs the label that put the record out, Cornelius Chapel. Me and him, you know, we kind of went back 15 or so years ago from kind of our early developing in this kind of scene here. But the other guys I met within the last few years, and I dug their music and their bands, and you know, I think it was like me and Will at first, like, we should put some kind of thing together. It was more for fun, you know, it wasn't really going to be a serious thing. And then we added Chris and Eric to the band and Wes. And it was still at that point, like, let's just throw out some ideas on the spot and see if anything sticks. It was like the first practice, we walked out of there with like six, you know, rough song ideas.
Let me state here that when you mentioned Chris, we're talking about your bass player, Chris McCauley.
And right.
You mentioned you first getting together with Will and kind of talking about the idea. That's Will Stewart. He's one of the guitar.
Right.
And then Eric is also a guitar player. Eric Wallace.
Fantastic guitar player. Yeah.
And I was going to ask, did you mention Wes McDonald as the drummer?
I might not have said he was the drummer. Yeah. He's, you know, actually through the years, people know him around here as a front man for his own projects and for his band called Vulture Whale. But yeah, he's a fantastic drummer and really fits the style perfectly that we all kind of threw out there, you know.
So you get together with these guys for the first time, and you have, you said, around six sort of song ideas kind of roughly put together from that first session, which of course was pretty exciting. And then you guys can keep working on stuff. And your debut album, your self-titled The Blips, came out this past April, was it recorded before the pandemic?
Yeah, so it actually was recorded right before the pandemic and mixed during the pandemic. So we were not all together during the mixing. Brad Timko, a really fantastic engineer here in Birmingham, was mixing it, and he would just text me mixes or text everybody in the band, I guess. And I somehow became the spokesman for the responses. We would then group on the phone and decide what we wanted to change or whatever. And then I would call Brad and talk through it. You know, I had worked with Brad a few times, so we did have a good rapport. You know, I think that's why I ended up being the one to do it. We kind of knew how to work together and stuff. So, it was honestly really came together quickly and really easily. Everybody in the group, including Brad and Les Newby, who actually set up the microphones to record it and sort of helped us record. We kind of did it ourselves / with him. Everybody is just experienced and been through it all so many times, it just, you know, it was just really quick, you know.
It's like a bunch of session guys getting together and knocking something out.
Exactly. It felt like that.
It was so your album, self-titled. Reviews of the album talk about how it's a mixture of pop and punk and country, and I like this one, angular post-punk. Well, I'm not quite sure what that means, but, you know, power pop, Americana, garage, quite the potpourri of aural sounds there. So, apropos, do you think people are, that's in the ballpark? That's how you would describe the music, a mixture of all this?
I guess so. You know, I always have a hard time pinpointing genres of music that I play in because, you know, I always feel like it's kind of pulling from so many places, but yeah, I think so. You know, I think Chris McCauley really adds that probably the post-punk or whatever that was, angular thing.
I know. I'm not sure I've seen that term myself, but
yeah. I mean, I'm taking that as they mean bands like Wire or stuff like that. You know, we bonded over Pink Flag, that first Wire album's.
Yeah.
Was a big influence on me for sure, and I believe him too. I think he's more of a Chairs Missing guy, but you know, I could see where that would come in through that. You know, I think the southern rock part probably comes a lot from maybe some of the writing / Will Stewart and Eric Wallace's guitar playing. You know, they're doing a lot of that kind of country twangy lead over that stuff. So
let's talk about our coolest song in the world this week. It's the opening track to the album called Inside Out. And initially what I was sent said that was a group composition, but I've also read that was the first song you brought to the table. So you had the initial idea for Inside Out.
You know, I actually wrote that one pretty much, you know, I mean, everybody, I'm not over there telling people what to play or anything, but you know, I came in with the chords and the melody. And then I wrote the words after we jammed on it. You know, we jammed on it and we were really good about recording all our practices or get togethers on our phone. So I came home with those blasting out through my iPhone and scribbled out the words to that one. But you know,
is that you counting off the song at its start?
That's actually Wes, the drummer. Okay. Yeah, he's the timekeeper back there. So I'll let him bring us in.
The backing vocals on that one, is that just the band members on the backing vocals?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that was one of our things when we talked about our identity or what we wanted to do. You know, we wanted to have lots of gang vocals and backing vocals where everybody's singing and all that stuff. So, yeah.
You talk about yourself, you know, writing the lyrics, scrubbing the lyrics, I think is how you phrased it. But I was wondering about the lyrics Inside Out, you know, being on the Inside Out, or then winding up, you know, reverse, outside in, and then wanting to be back on the other side. I'm assuming that resonates with your own life experiences, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Kind of in the back of my mind was that same trip I mentioned earlier, that first trip to LA, when I was briefly hired as the guitar player for this band called Verbena. That was a Birmingham based band, and they got signed to Capitol Records. And I wasn't a real member, you know. I was at that time, they were closing in on 30, and I was just now like 20, you know, so I was really had no idea what I was doing. But I got out there, and, you know, I remember these feelings of like, man, you know, you want to meet all the cool people that you've learned about or you've read about or heard about. And you're kind of like suddenly kind of you're standing next to them sometimes, or you're in their world. And then, you know, you kind of realize as soon as you get there, like how, you know, or for me personally, I was, you know, didn't feel natural like that. I was like, I just had this strong desire to just like, man, these people aren't really that cool. You know, like I want to be home with my homies, you know, my people that I'm really know, you know, so. I think it was sort of about that, I guess.
So we're going to take a listen to Throw Me Around, another track off the album, in a moment. But I wanted to ask you, Noah, first about a couple of other tunes on it, on the album. And the first one is Wild Thing 2, or maybe I'll call it Wild Thing Double I. Because when I read the title, I thought, oh, yes, Wild Thing 2, because, you know, like when a movie's really good, they make a double I version. So whose idea was it to revisit Wild Thing?
That was mine as well. And I brought that up with Will Stewart, and he liked the idea. At the time, the idea wasn't going to go all the way lyrically there. You know, it was just like, let's do a Wild Thing, you know, kind of riff, you know, super simple. You know, I was really into the idea of the Blips being this like three chord is all we will do, you know, per song. No, very simple songs. It ended up, you know, the angular thing came in and changed that a little bit. But, you know, it's a democracy here. So I let go of the rule. But that at the time was like one of the first things we did was the jam for Wild Thing 2. Yeah, I don't know. The lyrics just came out. You know, I just thought they were hilarious. Write it and call it Wild Thing 2. And the line, then I invented Wild Thing 2. I just thought it was really hilarious. You know, it's my own little personal bit of humor, I guess.
Chip Taylor, he wrote the original. So who do you credit your version to?
The Trogs were, you know, what we were going for. You know, over the last 10 years, I've gotten into this band who I believe that you know them personally, the Head Coatees. I've been a huge fan of that Davy Crockett song. You know, which was awesome.
What's that in your pocket or something? There's got a rhyme in there, pocket and lock it.
Lock it, yeah. Great, great song. And it's the same chords as well, you know, so. Probably changed the key, but it's the same three chords. And, you know, that was kind of, at the time I was like going for that, like, let's write a song that's like that. But I wasn't trying to go all the way Wild Thing too, until the words came out. And then that's what it turned into, kind of how I write. When I start writing a song, I don't always know quite what it's going to be about yet. It's like, it sort of just comes out automatically somehow. I don't know, you know, some kind of thing way in the back of your brain, I guess.
Oh, yes, your subconscious is crawling through your cerebellum there trying to get out.
Right, yeah. Sometimes feels like I always have said, like an antenna to the sky. And, you know, all these songs already exist. They're just floating around. And if you get your antenna up at the right moment, it's going to, boom, you catch it. And it's yours. You get to put your name on it, you know?
Oh, I like that. I like that description, Taylor. Another tune I want to ask you about, a bit of indecision on Yes, Yes, No, Yes, Yes, No. Whose initial idea was that song?
So that's Wes McDonald, and that's him singing that one. He wrote that one entirely.
Well, he's the drummer, right?
He's the drummer. Yep.
So the reason I'm saying as restating that is because what I liked about that one is the kind of the Mo Tucker kind of drum thing happening there. You know, I could see like it being a Velvet Underground kind of thing.
Yeah. To me, that song was when I first heard it, he was real on the fence about it. Like, I think he was like, I don't know, maybe this shouldn't be on the record. And in my mind, I really loved it. You know, I was like, I think it's the, you know, the Why Don't We Do It in the Road track of the, you know, from the White Album on the Blips. You know, it was our version of that. It was like this playful, goofy, silly thing over cool rock and roll.
Tell them that, you know, well, to me, I'm all about playful, silly and goofy. So
me too, man.
Right up
me
my too. Alley. You know, it's all, so one of my favorite on the record. Who's singing lead on Out to Sea?
Out to Sea is Chris McCauley on that one.
And is that primarily his tune, or who came up with that?
Yeah, I would say he pretty much wrote that one, if my memory serves me correct. I think I came up with the, you know, the little guitar riff.
Yeah.
I remember that might have been from that very first practice. He brought that idea to the table. The background vocal, I think, might have been me. I think I jumped in on that, just started doing it, you know, and everybody picked up on it quick and joined in. But yeah, that song I would credit to Chris. That's a cool little jam too. And really like that.
The last one I wanted to mention is Patty's Patio, and I was really digging the chorus on that. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, that one, if my memory serves me correct, Wes McDonald brought that one to the table, and I believe that Chris wrote the chorus, if I'm right. It could have been Wes wrote the chords and Chris sang it or something, but
yeah,
definitely a collab between the two of them. I actually played bass on that one. There's a couple tracks that Chris wanted to play guitar, so we swap positions there, which turns out to be kind of a pain on stage, but you know, we're doing it at least for now.
Oh, the pains of multi-instrumentalism. But I think, like, you know, on stage it is a pain, but when people see that in the audience, they really dig it, you know.
Yeah
it's because it shakes up the presentation there, lets everybody know that you know, there's not just one driver in the car. There's not one way to work the machine. You know, it's can switch it off. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very cool. Now that the album's out and, you know, the world seems to be getting much better as we go along here. Any plans of doing shows or touring with the Blips, this rock and roll consortium?
Man, we hope so. We've lined up a few shows, but mostly just here around the Southeast. At this point right now, we are booking ourselves, so it's, you know, can be a little tricky. Everybody's we've got a few dads in the picture. We've got, you know, grown men, you know, with houses and mortgages. So we're probably not going to go crazy out there and, you know, run through every dive bar in every city. But, you know, I do hope that we can pick it up and play some good shows. I think we're hoping for some opening kind of slots. You know, if we could get a decent opening tour, I'm sure we would take it. So
the other track we have time to listen to right now off of the debut album Blips is Throw Me Around. And this was a single that predated the album's release, I think, for a couple of months. Maybe it came out in February.
That sounds right. Yeah. I think Throw Me
right,
Around.
So now who wrote Throw Me Around?
Now that one's cool. That's actually the only song on the album that we could totally credit the writing to the entire band.
Cool.
And I, that might be a first time for me, honestly, in any of my projects that I play in. I think, let's see, Eric brought the chords to the picture. That's another one that I play bass on. I think Eric and Chris maybe had gotten together before we got together as a band. And I want to say Chris wrote the instrumental lead part, you know, on the intro and the breaks, the guitar lead kind of thing. I'm pretty sure Chris wrote that. If not, Eric probably did. Then I wrote the vocal melody and the words. Mm-hmm. Although Will Stewart actually, I think he came up with the chorus "Throw Me Around" part. Because at first I remember we were going to do it where he sang the chorus and I sang the verses, sort of like some of the other Blip songs where you get a different singer on the chorus.
Right.
Like Patty's Patio, like you were talking about. But at some point, I don't know, he asked me to sing the chorus. Yeah, he didn't want to, so I took over that. And then I think he just sings it with me or something. But yeah, you know, I really think we all had an input in the arranging and everything. So pretty cool that it came out as easy as it did. And we didn't sever any heads or anything over.
Well, you also made a video for Throw Me Around.
We did. Just recently.
I look back at the watch the end and I see the credits there and, your bass player, Chris McCauley, had a hand in making it. Is that him actually in the video?
Chris McCauley got one of his friends to make that video. I'm blanking on his name. And he wanted to make a skateboard video. You know, kind of like when we were talking about when we were teenagers, back when I was, you know, this grunge period I was talking about. These skateboard videos were really big and are kind of friend circles, you know. He was like, we should make a skateboard video that's like old school like that, you know. So they did it. I really didn't have much to do with that video either. I sort of laid back and commented here and there when I would get sent edits. But yeah, I don't know the skateboarder's name either. But I believe it's all some of Chris's good buddies.
Right. Which kind of has kind of a tragic ending. I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, it does.
Taylor, thanks so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Dude, man, it's such an honor. I'm really blown away that you guys did this for us, and we really appreciate it. Great to talk to you, man.
Man, you are so welcome. I'm so happy to be able to chat with you here. And we're going to go out with that track. We're going to go out with Throw Me Around. From the eponymous debut full-length album from the Blips, Throw Me Around in Little Steven's Underground Garage. From the Blips here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Find it on the band's self-titled debut album, available from Cornelius Chapel Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to band member Taylor Hollingsworth for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. And be sure and join me again next time around for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.